welcome to the Research Culture Uncovered podcast, where in every episode we explore what is research culture and what should it be. You'll hear thoughts and opinions from a range of contributors to help you change research culture into what you want it to be.
Not too long ago, academic careers were seen as a kind of one-way street. It was commonly assumed that academics either stayed on an academic career path or left and never came back. Today, things are different, with plenty of academics coming to the field later after a career elsewhere, leaving academia for a career outside of it, or even hopping between academia and industry. However, that myth of the old one-way street is still really prevalent among researchers today. I'm Taryn Bell, and I'm a researcher developer focused on supporting researchers' career development. I regularly speak to researchers who are surprised to hear that leaving academia doesn't have to be forever if they don't want it to. And I also speak to a huge number of academics with experience in other sectors who tell me about the benefits they've gained from those experiences. So, in today's episode, we're thinking about career mobility. What are the benefits? What are the challenges? And what can be done to encourage movement between sectors? In this episode, you'll hear an interview that Ruth Winden and I conducted with Danny Croucher, who works as a policy lead at the National Centre for Universities and Businesses, or NCUB. We wanted to have a chat with Danny because NCUB have been doing some really interesting work over the last couple of years, advocating for a national innovation system, enabling freer movement between academia and other sectors. You'll also hear insights from a number of researchers at the University of Leeds who got in touch to tell us about what they've learned and how they've benefited from working outside of academia. So, on with the episode. We're very pleased to welcome Danny Croucher from NCUB. So, welcome to the podcast, Danny.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, could you start us off by talking a little bit about NCUB's remit and kind of purview, just for anyone listening who's not familiar with the organisation?
Of course, yeah. So NCUB is the National Centre for Universities and Business, we're effectively a policy and analysis think tank that is located in London, and we work to make the UK the top destination for university business collaboration. We're backed by UKRI through kind of a sponsorship deal from them, but also through university and business membership. And really, we provide three key functions. So we provide analysis and evidence on university and business-based research innovation and the collaboration metrics that they kind of do within that. We develop recommendations to help unlock the full potential of the two sectors, both independently and collectively through collaboration. And we convene and we broker collaboration through our matchmaking platform, Confer.
And could you tell me a little bit more about your role at NCUB and how you got into this area?
So at NCUB, I lead our policy work, policy and evidence work around skills and talent, and also policy impact and engagement. So I've been with the team there for just over 2.5 years, and I've been working in science and innovation policy in some form over the last kind of 7 or 8 years across a range of different roles. So that takes loads of different forms, working in different places, including places like the Institute of Physics and the National Physical Laboratory, which is a government-owned lab. But working in different areas of research innovation policy like skills, but also like looking at the total level of funding for science and research, how that's distributed across different sectors and places, and how we can make the most of that funding as well. So it's a really interesting kind of space to work in. It gives you a lot of kind of big picture thinking about the kind of whole breadth of how our system works and how government really supports it to do so.
So, Danny, a large part of your work is encouraging researchers to move between sectors. What do you see as the benefits?
Benefits are really, really broad to this, and I think they're kind of threefold. So individually, I think we'll start with thinking about how this really helps individual researchers in their own kind of career and personal lives. I think at an individual level, when somebody does move between kind of sectors or different parts of our like research and innovation ecosystem, they gain a huge amount personally. So they gain new skills, new knowledge, they open up opportunities and new networks, and just gain these new experiences that really help their own careers and their own understanding of what they do and the full kind of scope of the landscape in which their work plays a role. And that really leads to kind of both personal benefits, but also improved outcomes of their own research, their own impact. They take the knowledge into new places, and that really drives how they can apply that. During the research of the Research and Mobility Task Force that we ran back in 2023, speaking to researchers who've been more mobile, so they really enjoy the diversity that that kind of career pathway creates. So there's kind of multiple different ways that individual researchers can benefit from this.
A great example of this is Dr. Gautier Belchai. He's a lecturer in sustainable freight transport and logistics at the University of Leeds. He's been an academic for roughly 10 or so years, but before completing his PhD, he spent around 4 years working in industry, taking a number of roles in shipping, logistics, and export management. And he told us that working in industry has had a number of benefits for him.
First, it has been incredibly useful in finding original research questions. When I started reading academic articles and even basic textbooks, I could immediately relate the theories to real-world experiences. For example, when I came across the work of Theodore Levitt and Michael Porter on differentiation, I thought about how container shipping was becoming commoditized, and that led to my research on how container lines can differentiate their services. That was my first article while doing PhD, and it was published in Transport Policy, one of the leading journals, transport journals. Second, it has made my research more relevant and realistic. When I design surveys, people in the industry often tell me the questions feel very relevant to practice. That kind of relevance not only improves the quality of responses, but also boosts engagement and trust. Another big advantage is the network I built in industry. It helps me connect with potential respondents much more easily. And finally, the practical implications in my papers tend to stand out. Reviewers often highlight that section as one of the strongest parts, and I believe that comes from having a real-world understanding of what matters to businesses.
This idea of bridging academia and industry, of connecting between theory and practice, is something that's also echoed by Dr. Ali Shepherd, who's a research fellow in education and politics at Leeds. What I think is really interesting about Ali's perspective is that often when we use the term industry, we're thinking about the scientific industries, but Ali, coming from the social sciences, has a different perspective and a different experience of what it means to be involved in industry.
So I finished my BA in International Development and Politics from the University of Leeds in 2010, and then I trained to be an English teacher and went into working in education and development in Latin America. After 3 years, I returned to Leeds to do an MA in Global Development and Education, during which my working experience helped immensely to apply the theory to real-world situations and also feel confident contributing to the course. I then did a 2-year VSO, Voluntary Service Overseas, teacher training program in Myanmar and used my knowledge on participatory ways of working to help adapt that program to the context, which was again very satisfying. And then after that, I moved to the humanitarian sector, working with people seeking safety in Europe, again in education, and then did a PhD in education policy at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the US, specializing in language education for adult migrants. During this time, I conducted critical teacher research in my own classroom, as well as working as an interim coordinator of education for a refugee community centre. And then since graduating, I've been working as a research fellow at Leeds, and I'm currently at a kind of crossroads thinking about whether my next role will be in academia or industry and how to utilise my strengths of bridging the worlds of theory and practice for my next position.
Scott McLaughlin is an associate professor in composition and music technology at Leeds. He has wide-ranging experience both in and out of academia and told us about how these experiences provided him with a much broader set of skills, allowing him to move more seamlessly between different spheres and interact with different audiences.
I work in an area called practice research, which is a relatively new research field in the sense that it's really more a way of grouping together people who are both creative practitioners and researchers. So in my case, I'm a composer. I write music for concert halls and installations, etc. But also the act of composing is part of how I do my research. So in this way, I continuously have both a foot in research and a foot in industry. And it really becomes more about thinking about which parts of what I do face a public or industry audience and which parts of what I do face a research audience. So I'm often having to take different perspectives to slice things up a little differently depending on how I'm presenting, who I'm presenting to. So the exact same piece of music, I might write a program note that talks about some aspects of its meaning or where it comes from or how it was made, its context. The exact same piece of music I might then present in a conference while talking about the processes of construction and how there are new insights to be gained from particular ways of writing the music, etc. And this is often quite difficult because as artists we're trained towards a public audience. We're trained to think about it that way a lot of the time. So then trying to take the same thing and think about that object from a different perspective as a research object is a little challenging, and there aren't a lot of models out there. So we're all kind of muddling our way through that a little bit. But by the same token, it's really interesting to have to be able to do that, to reconceive of these things for different audiences.
It's easy to think of the benefits of industry experience as all being at the individual level, but as Danny told us, organisations really benefit from career mobility too.
On an organisational level, we then find that those who employ teams who have had experiences across different sectors and teams that are comprised of different sectoral kind of people with different sector expertise, they too enjoy those improved outcomes because they have a broader range of skills, of knowledge and access to networks in different places, access to different infrastructures. And it creates the possibility to build more bridges in between sectors and organizations, but also future partnerships and collaboration opportunities, knowledge exchange, and supporting all of that is kind of upskilling more people internally and the next generation coming through as well. And that's why kind of at the broad level, the government is really interested in this agenda and creates those really kind of wider benefits for the system. And we have evidence that shows that where businesses really engage with this, they have improved business outcomes. So with that, we get improved productivity, improved impact from innovation and R&D. And that really helps the bigger picture economic performance piece that the government is really, really interested in. So threefold and really broad benefits to everybody involved, really.
And, you know, for us as researcher developers, it's so interesting to see the bigger picture because Taryn and I, we work with our researchers directly, personally, and at Leeds, we have a really strong history in this area. We've run a program here, Career Architect, since 2013, helping people move into different sectors. And one thing that I notice is how much fear there is, the fear of the unknown, and that's holding people back. And so Taryn and I, we work really hard on helping our researchers embrace all those wonderful opportunities. And we have a great track record. But I'm interested in your perspective on, you know, what challenge do you see, Danny, when it gets into the way of intersectoral mobility?
There are so many challenges, and that's why it's so great to be having this conversation and for it to be going out to so many researchers who are in that position and thinking about their own careers. So running interviews with researchers on the kind of should they, shouldn't they, people reflecting on their careers was really interesting and in revealing some of the kind of the motivations and the fears behind this. I think a lot of it is in terms of how people see their own careers, their own career ambitions, their role models, and that there's still a lot of kind of negative perception around leaving, particularly leaving academia. But interviews with with researchers on both sides across the whole R&D innovation ecosystem, both in academia and in businesses and industrial settings, have shown that a lot of these views really persist, a lot of perceptions still exist. So a lot of particularly academics think it's probably a one-way door. If I move into an industrial role, if I move into a business, I probably won't be able to come back. And that's quite daunting. And often their role models haven't had that experience. They may have had quite a linear trajectory themselves. So that kind of understanding of what it looks like isn't as close. It's more foreign, I think, in a way. So that's definitely one hurdle. But you have it the other way around as well. Interviews with people in industrial roles, say kind of classic tropes that you hear around academia as well. So it's very much live in both directions. And that's something culturally, slowly, we're really, really trying to shift. And I think improving mobility at a more senior level can help really shift the dial on that, because people then speaking about their own careers can help demonstrate that actually these things aren't what you assume they will be, and really help kind of socializing that. So I think there's a real kind of argument for increasing the touch points between different parts of the sectors and different parts of our kind of landscape, so that you get that kind of familiarization and socialization of how different teams and people work. And I think there's a big part of that is creating the opportunity and organizations having to work to do that. But I think we can't really also ignore the kind of the structural and organizational limits that actually do systematically limit this. I think that there has traditionally been a lack of opportunities such as placements and secondments that harm the kind of people would naturally quite like to try before you buy, which I think is a really human thing. It's a massive move. And if you also think, oh, I'll never be able to go back to this role or this sector as a whole, then I think you as a researcher owning that risk is quite unfair when that risk is that large. So the try before you buy options of secondments and placements and having more kind of close partnership relationships would really, really ease that as well.
Secondments and placements are a great opportunity to try out a different field, even if you decide that it's not for you in the end. Eric Atwell, who is a professor of artificial intelligence for language at Leeds, found his industry secondment useful in helping him figure out exactly where he wanted to work, helping him to make more informed career decisions along the way.
Rather than just applying for a job and seeing how it goes, another option you might want to consider is secondment. I, for example, got seconded for 3 years to GIST, the Joint Information Systems Committee, essentially to manage their national initiative in knowledge-based systems. There's the Knowledge-Based Systems Initiative, and they wanted someone to run it in sort of industrial way. I spent the time running, going around the country, monitoring projects in knowledge-based systems. Then after 3 years, I returned to Leeds University. I actually decided I didn't like what I was doing, so I was happy to return to academia. And that's one of the advantages of secondment. You have a safe place to return to. On the other hand, if I had really liked it, I could have just given up my secondment return possibility and stayed with GISC.
However, as Danny highlighted, there can be organisational and structural barriers to intersectoral mobility, though there is some work going on to alleviate this.
There's then the issues of kind of application processes are really different. And there's been some good progress on this, like the narrative CV applications that are rolling out should really, really ease some of this for some people applying to academia in particular. But the reforms to REF as well, because it kind of, when you look at the picture as a whole, if you have been in industry for a long time and then you're applying to an academic role and you don't have a publication record, you're unlikely to be as competitive. So a move from universities to recognise research skills and experience in all different disciplines will be really, really key to removing that barrier to enabling people from all backgrounds to be able to apply to these roles. And then finally, just boosting awareness that there are opportunities outside of the kind of narrow career trajectory that so many people think they are within are really, really key barriers, I think, and taken together that that covers kind of the personal barriers, structural barriers, institutional barriers, and you can see why it's so difficult for people to be able to do this.
And is it a misconception to think that there's relatively little movement from industry into different sectors?
So we calculated the figures as best as we could. It's something that's really, really difficult to track, actually. But we published a research paper that looked calculating the different levels of research and mobility in the UK. Our best estimations are that around 20 to 25% of university researchers have had experiences outside of a university setting. So that could be in business, it could be in a government lab, it could be in any kind of other research sector, third sector, etc. Whereas 44% of people doing research in private sector have previously worked in higher education. So that effectively means there's a lot more movement into the private sector than there is into the higher education system. And I think that's something that we do recognise. And I think it's something that some of the structural barriers around accessing roles within academia are responsible for that, as well as the limited movement outside of academics leaving university setting because of those fears around being able to come back in. So, yeah, I think that's totally true. And I think it's recognised across the sector.
That's so interesting.
So you were talking a little bit about some of the research that NCUB has done, and I know that obviously the Research and Career Mobility Task Force has done quite a lot of work in this area too. So in 2023 you published a report called Pathways to Success, which focused on this subject of career mobility, and that report was essentially a call to action to institutions, to funders, to businesses, to researchers themselves. And then last October, you released your 1 year on report, which talked about the progress that had been made since. Now, obviously, a lot has changed since 2023 and even since that report came out in October. You know, we've had a change of government in the UK. We've had big international changes, big changes in direction. So could you talk a little bit about what were the most interesting findings from the 1 year on report and perhaps where that work is going now?
Yeah, the 1 year on report was something that was really interesting to do. It came almost perfectly a year on from the publication of the 2023 Research Career Mobility Task Force. And it was a year's worth of work looking at across the different recommendations areas that we had within the initial report. We worked to see exactly how the landscape had changed both within those recommendation areas but also around it, because across that time it was the general election period, huge shifts in national policy, and also big kind of global shifts as well in access to talent and global trends around international mobility as well, which all play quite a key role in this and the skills and kind of international talent that landscape that sits within. It was a really, really interesting thing to do because we've had real engagement with this agenda and it's been really, really positive to work on as we've moved this into effectively an advocacy piece of work. There's been great engagement from the government on this. So, for example, DSIT, the Department for Science, Innovation and Technology, run a survey that effectively interviews and surveys people working in research across different sectors. It's quite unique because a lot of the data that we actually have on researchers is collected through HESA, Higher Education Statistics Authority, and largely only captures those working in academia. But this is something that goes kind of UK-wide across different sectors, and that has been updated since this work so that we now have a much better view on who's mobile, why, and their kind of future intention. So it's quite a central change to the heart of being able to understand this problem. We now have a much better understanding of national kind of picture of mobility of our research workforce and what it looks set to do in the future. So that's really, really exciting. And it complements ongoing change that the OECD is making, and they have something called the Careers Observatory. So together we'll have really good data in the UK that we can compare across OECD nations as well. We've seen funders really prioritising mobility. We've seen a lot more kind of cross support for mobility programmes, and also more kind of awareness of the fact that these need to be reviewed and assessed to make sure that they're being accessed equally. So that's been really, 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 really successful as well. UKRI have been running a great campaign called 101 Careers Switching Sectors, which profiles people who've moved between different sectors across their career, and promotes the benefits of this. And all of that was kind of something that was recommended within the 2023 Task Force report as well. So really positive. And then also we had the benefit of being able to speak to a lot of the different NCB members and wider community of universities and businesses to see kind of progress in this space. And I think it takes a long time to change things like application processes and promotion criteria. But the awareness has really, really shifted, and we're seeing already moves among some universities and businesses to thinking about how can we create more opportunities, more secondment opportunities, more partnerships, things like incubation spaces where you could have different teams from different places come together, and you can get that real flow of ideas and knowledge and knowledge exchange. I think knowledge transfer is a huge part of this as well. And then we've also seen the kind of scale up and roll out of Prosper, which is a kind of a really positive group around that develop career development. They're based out of Liverpool, and they make a really, really positive impact in this space as well. And then down in Exeter, a new group called Developing Business Aware Academics, who are working to really improve the awareness among academics of what opportunities there are out there, but also the skills they have to be able to go out and take them. So on the whole, over just 1 year, I think we've seen this rise in the agenda a huge amount, and it's been really, really positive to work in. And I think it's only going to get better as more people kind of understand the opportunities that there are out there.
We're kind of at a crux point almost, it feels like, because there are so many of these initiatives starting. There's all the work that you're doing as well. And some of it is obviously for good reasons, like you say, you know, there's this understanding of the benefits of researcher career mobility. But some of it is from those negative pressures as well. You know, academia is getting more and more competitive more than ever. And there are fewer jobs in academia than ever. So to a certain extent, for a lot of researchers, this is not just something that it's nice to do. It's an absolute career necessity to be able to move out of academia into other industries as well.
Absolutely. And that's something that's hugely beneficial for the UK's kind of major economic agenda as well. Like across the industrial strategy sectors, it's really important that we do move this kind of top talent that's coming out of university and move them into careers that are really rewarding, but just don't sit within academia. And there's amazing opportunities out there, but being able to get them into those roles and opening up those opportunities for them is such a crucial part of it.
Yeah, it strikes me that there's maybe two challenges there. The first is, like you say, getting people the knowledge of how to do these things and the opportunities. But there's also the kind of emotional tie to an academic identity that I think academics struggle with. You know, we've all heard those narratives in the past of if you leave academia, you've failed. And I definitely think that's definitely changing as time goes on, but it's still quite pervasive. And I do wonder sometimes the problem for many academics is that they are surrounded by academics who've always been in academia. And so it's hard to see those examples of people who've gone out and done those things and worked in other sectors.
I think one of the key challenges as well is a middle career is particularly a point where you get fewer people being mobile. And I think that's often a stage where a lot of young people coming in look for role models. They're more relatable, and often those people kind of are very static in their roles. And so I think if we can shift it a little bit more to have people who are in those kind of role model positions within organizations who are able to describe the different experiences that they've had and suggest and recommend opportunities that are probably someone hasn't even thought about for themselves, then that could really help kind of nudge us in the right direction, but really requires catalyzing mobility across different career stages. And that will really help compound the benefits for years to come, I think.
Absolutely. And Ruth, I know that mid-careers work is something that is very close to your heart.
Yeah, so we are just launching a new mid-career program, and it is actually the career orientation at mid-career point, and I'm really looking forward to working with our academics at Leeds on this challenge, and challenging them also to take stock and consider not just academia, but also other opportunities. So we'll report back on that when we have finished our pilot. And I just wanted to ask you, Danny, if I was a researcher and I wanted to move into different sectors, how would I start going about that?
The big question. There are loads of opportunities out there. I think the challenge is awareness of them. So it'd be great if we could all collectively promote the opportunities a little bit more. But I want to talk about a few out there that are really accessible and that look for applications kind of annually. A lot of these opportunities and programs are funded centrally through UKRI or through the national academies, who are the Academy of Medical Sciences, the British Academy, the Royal Society and the Royal Academy of Engineering. Each of those different bodies runs an individual mobility program. It's usually something like a Future Leaders program or an Innovation Fellowship, Industrial Fellowship, that enables you to kind of develop a kind of a two-year portfolio with this group, kind of engage in a new project where mobility or cross-sectoral experiences really are embedded within the programme. So there's the chance within each of these to be able to move into a new environment to do research. So it opens up a lot of opportunities, and it also enables people who have been through it to kind of understand the system a lot kind of from a bird's eye view, which is really, really important. UKRI then also directly fund mobility programmes through the research councils as well. So you've got UKRI's Future Leader Fellowships, Innovation Scholars, and of course, Knowledge Transfer Partnerships. KTPs are so popular, and kind of the opportunity to do that, I'd always recommend doing it. It's something that both sides, both the businesses who receive postdoc students kind of further in their career, are always really, really complimentary. So that's a really great one. But beyond the kind of public resource for this, a lot of big businesses have different provision as well. So luckily, as part of our task force model, we had representatives, kind of leading figures in some of the key research bodies in the UK that are kind of big businesses, including Amazon and Arup, for example. And we heard a lot about the work that different groups like this are doing. So Amazon has an Amazon Scholars Program, which enables academics who are at the top of their game effectively to work as consultants part-time. They retain their contract with whatever university they are employed to, but it means they can really contribute and engage in a different part of the system. And they do a range of different activities, from business advice to kind of solving their technical challenges that exist within the really technical side of delivery within Amazon, and also some kind of workforce upskilling as well. So it's a really, really diverse opportunity. You've also got in the city of Glasgow a collaboration between the University of Glasgow and AstraZeneca called Glasgow Discovery Centre, and that's a really exciting programme where they really kind of blended teams to get bi-directional knowledge flow, and that kind of collaborative working where you actually partner and enable two-way kind of secondment and sabbatical is really, really critical. And so there are examples like that, and in future kind of the more and more we can create that as organizations is really key. And then the final one I'll just speak to is a really great sector specific program that's called CDICE. It's the Center for Postdoctoral Development in Infrastructure, Cities and Energy. So it works to support particularly the green agenda, and it's hosted by Loughborough University, but it's a collaboration between 18 different universities, and it's particularly supports opportunities for industrial placement. So it's a really exciting opportunities for academics working in that space to be able to kind of partner with new organizations and explore different parts of the landscape.
And it's so exciting to hear about all these opportunities, because I think most of our researchers would probably think, oh, I need to find a job in a different sector. And there are many, many schemes where they can dip in, get experience to varying lengths and degrees of length, and then can come back or decide to move on longer term. That's really exciting. Thank you for sharing those.
The final thing we wanted to think about was next steps. So from your perspective as someone who has quite a high level understanding of this, for you, are there any recommendations for what university, both universities and industrial organisations, to be doing to encourage mobility more?
I think the key things that universities and businesses can be doing is kind of three buckets. So there's action to help attract talent from another sector, to promote the experiences internally so that more people can kind of access these, and then help enable opportunities in the future. So to attract, that's definitely action around reviewing the application criteria that you have. Is this something that someone from another sector knows how to do? Would their CV really kind of qualify them for the role? Do they have the skills? And is that a barrier that's kind of been created through the processes that you have? It's a really, really important thing that I think needs kind of institutional change to fix. Promotion is really, really important as well. So really valuing the experiences that come from different sectors and embedding them into promotion frameworks and criteria will help kind of incentivize this, because of course people always want to try and have their own personal success, and it's one way of really creating that. And in doing that, it really kind of will help compound that as we get more experience cross-sector in different sectors. It will help create those role models for those around them as well. And under the enable bucket, I think kind of a review of opportunities and partnerships, creating more partnerships, fostering different relationships would really, really help to make sure that staff are aware, to make sure that there are opportunities, and to make sure that there are kind of time-bound opportunities as well that are really flexible to support. Some people might need it kind of part-time, some people might need it as a block, some people might want it one day a week. So having a really flexible approach to allowing people from all different backgrounds and circumstances to be able to access these opportunities would be something really, really important. And we are seeing those discussions happening in so many universities particularly already, so it's really exciting.
And I think that's the thing that we often forget about research mobility. Like Ruth said earlier, it's not just about moving out permanently. There are flexible options for people to kind of dip their toe in, do it part-time, try it alongside their existing academic research and things like that, which is really exciting. I think it sounds like there's a lot coming up and a lot of opportunities for researchers, so it's a, you know, quite a positive outlook overall.
Absolutely. And this, we kind of can't pretend this isn't happening against quite a difficult kind of environment that universities face themselves in as well. But I think this is a real opportunity for universities to kind of operate within that. Partnering externally, partnering with businesses is a new approach, and is something that could be really beneficial, because those partnerships we know are really fruitful and could help access to new skills, to upskill their current staff, and to increase their kind of bilateral flow of knowledge transfer as well. So it could be a really, really important part of that puzzle that a lot of universities find themselves in now as well.
Thanks so much for your time, Dani.
Thank you so much. No, it's great. A lot of the work that we do at NCB really is just there to make sure that the system works as best as it can. And it's not just for research and kind of innovation, but it's also so that people have fulfilled and interesting careers and know where to go with their next step. So it's been an interesting topic to work on over the last few years. And I really have seen the dial shift, to use the cliche, in this space, which I don't think you always get in policy work. And I think it's a credit to the sector for really grasping it and getting ready to kind of run with it and take those opportunities. So it's been amazing.
Thanks so much to Dani for such an honest and informed perspective on career mobility. And thanks also to Gotche, Alison, Scott and Eric for sharing their personal perspectives on work both in and out of academia. The resources and projects mentioned within this episode will all be listed in the show notes, as well as the NCUB report that we mentioned, should you wish to take a look yourself. Thanks from Ruth and I for listening to another episode of Research Culture Uncovered. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to the Research Culture Uncovered podcast. Please subscribe so you never miss out on our brand new episodes. And if you're enjoying the discussions, give us some love by dropping a 5-star rating and written review, as it helps other research culturists find us. And please share with a friend and show them how to subscribe. Thanks for listening, and here's to you and your research culture.